And I'm Katie King.
And this is
True Crime New England.
What is up, everybody?
Hello. Welcome back.
It is just another beautiful day here in New England.
Yes, it is.
And we have some questions for you guys.
We sure do.
If you could answer them out loud as you're listening, that would be amazing. But we would prefer it in writing to us elsewhere. But we were thinking, time is going crazy these days. And if you could believe it, we're coming up on a big day. A big day, aren't we?
An anniversary,
of
sorts. One may say.
Sure, yes. Sure. I would say that. And you know what? We need your help. For our 1 year anniversary of True Crime New England, we're at a loss. We don't know what to do. It should be special, right?
For sure.
So how do we make it special for you guys? I have no idea.
Yeah. What should we do? Should we do a giveaway? Uh-huh. Should we do...
See, we have no idea.
Help us out.
Katie is the kind of person who plans things.
Oh, yeah.
Very well. And so she's gone through and basically counted out the days, like all the Thursdays, and what episode we would be on our anniversary or around. And ironically, it's episode 50.
How perfect is that?
Right? That's pretty awesome. So in my opinion, that's 50 episodes, a one-year anniversary. It should be celebrated. But how? We really need your guys' help. What would you want as a listener?
Yes.
From us. We have a few ideas and a few small things that we're probably going to do. But not anything crazy. So help us out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a call to action, yes. Per se. Help us.
Please.
Help us.
So much please. Because, man, we've just been thinking about it and trying to come up with ideas. And we're even kind of at a loss for ideas for giveaways.
Yeah, that too.
So if you guys have other podcasts that you listen to or that you're a fan of that do things like this, give us a shout out. Tell us what they do. What you think we should do as your favorite podcast.
Yeah, whatever you guys can share with us. We're just excited.
And to bring it right back down, as we usually do, our case today, and we've talked about how Rhode Island doesn't give us very much.
Yes.
Unfortunately. And it seems like every case we do in Rhode Island is a suspicious death.
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah. Right? All of them. They're all interesting, but...
The majority, for sure.
Yeah. So, once again, another call to action. If you guys have Rhode Island cases you want to share with us, please do. We try and avoid anything with the mafia, which for some reason is very prevalent in Rhode Island.
Yeah, what is up with that?
I don't know. Very weird. But, so today's case is, again, another suspicious death, but you know, it's cases like these that kind of get you thinking, and this definitely does. It sucks because a lot of the resources are very similar, and you know, it all kind of seems the same, but it's a good story, and I think they're just as important to tell.
For sure.
Yeah.
There's a lot about it.
Yeah.
Which is very cool.
Yeah.
But
suspicious.
There you go.
It's almost like I planned it.
It's almost like the death is suspicious.
Oh, remember the time we Googled synonyms for suspicious?
Yeah.
Because we were thinking of like, we can't just have it say suspicious all the time. So what did we get? Like mysterious?
Mysterious. We used that.
I think that's it.
Yeah.
So anyway, every 6 episodes or so, it's going to be probably a suspicious or mysterious happening. But it's fine. We love it. We got to cover all of New England. It's only fair.
We have to spread the wealth.
Of course. And we're not going to leave Rhode Island out.
No.
No, we would never. How
dare you accuse us of that, listener. That's right. I'm talking to you. You get off that treadmill right now and go to your room. Just kidding. Anyway, yeah, this case is just, it's pretty straightforward, but we like to hear what you guys think yes. about it and what you think happened.
Theories, for sure, please.
There's always some, always. So there's no exception of that with today's case. And without further ado, today we will be covering
the suspicious death of Greg Hart.
All right, so let's get into it. Katie, if you give me your sources, I would really appreciate it.
Sure. I got sources from Reddit,
okay,
wickedlocal.com, NECN.com, True Crime Diva was a very interesting source, as well as Boston 25 News.
All right. I used NECN as well. True Crime Diva had a good blog post.
Yes.
As well. I used Boston 25 News. I also used Reddit, probably the same thread that you had.
Probably.
And then I also had, I had this blog. It was called Footprints at the River's Edge.
Ooh.
Yeah, right?
Okay.
Very poetic. So I was like, you know what? I'll go with it.
Sure.
Great. And they had some good information too. So I think ultimately we got a good list of sources here.
Sweet.
All right. So let's get into it. So first, let's talk a little bit about our main character here. His name was Gregory Hart, and he was described as a nice kid with a great family, which is promising, and not everyone can say that, which
for
is
real.
Nice.
For yeah. real.
At this time, he had just moved to Dedham, Mass. He had graduated the year prior from UMass Amherst, where he got a degree in economics, and was actually known to have tutored students there as well.
Oh.
Yeah, he was very helpful. And apparently his freshman year of college, he struggled a lot with his grades, but he actually put in the work and ended up graduating cum laude, which was with honors. So he did a good job. He really turned it around. He had also been accepted into an officer's program to be a Navy fighter pilot.
What?
Yeah, I know. Navy fighter pilot. That's crazy.
That's really cool.
It is pretty cool. And so at the time of this situation, he had actually just gotten a job, a brand new job, at something called Meditech in Westwood, Mass. And he was scheduled to begin work on Monday, March 15th. So he was pretty excited because it was his first, like, quote, real job in the, quote, real world with his degree. And as people who have jobs from a degree, it's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
When you get that first, like, you're putting it to use. It's pretty cool. So that's exactly what he was doing. He was about to start this new job. He had a new apartment. He was in a good spot, it sounded like. So let's talk about, unfortunately, the day of his very suspicious death.
Yeah. So on March 13th, 2010, Gregory, he's 23 years old at this time, he is driving his Ford Mustang from his home in Dedham, Massachusetts to Providence, Rhode Island. He's going to his friend's apartment. They are about to celebrate his starting his new job.
Right.
And, you know, he's going to go out with them and hang out and get some drinks.
Yeah. I mean, celebrate. Again, first big boy job. That's not something to be quiet about.
He drove down at about 10 p.m. that night, and then he met up with his friends William McClendon, Zachary Picquo, and then Zachary Picquo's girlfriend Megan O'Keefe. And then all four of them took a cab to a nightclub called the Red Room. This nightclub was later renamed the Saints and Sinners before it closed completely.
Yeah.
So, as always, when there's key locations to a case, if they have a name change, it could complicate things.
Right.
And if they close completely, obviously that would complicate a lot of things.
Right, unfortunately. It seemed like everything was going pretty normal and that they were having a good time. Except for, this part confused me. So there's not really much known about that night.
Yeah.
Which is funny because there was a lot of people he was with.
And he was also at a bar, which is usually, you know, full of people.
On a Saturday night especially.
So nobody saw anything?
Right.
Yeah, right. But what we do know is that a little after 1 a.m., so now it was March 14th of 2010, a phone call was made from Greg Hart's phone, which ended up being the last call made on his phone. So this is 2010. He had an iPhone, very much early iPhone days. They realized that at, you know, this time, 1 a.m., he called William McClendon, which is someone he was with at the bar. This confused me. Why would he call someone who he was at the bar with?
Yeah, and the phone call lasted 8 minutes, about yeah. 8 minutes. So even if you get separated from your friend at the bar, you know how sometimes, like, for me especially, there have been times where I've gotten separated and I just make a 2-second phone call, like, hey, right. where are you? Oh, I'm over by this entrance. Okay, awesome. I'll see you soon.
Right.
It does not take 8 minutes to find somebody in a bar.
Yeah, that's very weird. Something tells me it wasn't that big of a bar where they would be lost, or he would be calling and trying to get a hold of his friend for 8 whole minutes.
Exactly.
That's a very suspicious. Very suspicious. And what's crazy is the police never found out what the phone call was about. Which is weird because William McClendon is still very much alive.
Right. Wasn't he supposed to be on the other end of the phone?
Exactly. Like,
and also, what I thought was really bizarre was that there was some kind of a fight or a disturbance that night at the club that police reported.
Right.
But no one really elaborated what the fight was about or whether or not our guy in question, Greg Hart, was involved.
Right.
This to me really stood out to me because it sounds very similar at first to the case we did Mike McClain.
Oh, it does. You're right. I was even thinking of episode 6, the murder of Robert Joyle.
Yes.
Where there's a group of people, wherever it may be, and a lot of witnesses, but nobody comes forward.
Right.
Why? Maybe I could see why in, like, Robert Joyle, he was murdered, it was a gang thing.
Yes.
But Mike McClain, who we did a few episodes ago, and then Greg Hart, why? Why is no one coming forward?
Right.
What happened that they don't want to get in trouble and are not saying anything? It's a really good question. That's a good point. I didn't even think of Michael McClain. What is the reason why all these people, we know at least 3 people were with him, so why didn't they say anything?
Right.
Hmm.
And what kills me is that when these people later were questioned, like, hey, you know, when did you notice that Greg wasn't with you?
Right.
When did you realize you lost Greg? Where did you think he was going?
Yeah.
They said that they thought he was going to a nearby IHOP, like they did sometimes.
Yeah.
But then Greg's brother was like, it's the beginning of March in New England.
Yeah.
It's still winter.
Yeah.
Greg only does this with you guys when it's summertime, when it's warm out.
Right. And it was raining that night, too.
Right.
So that's peculiar. And that was so confusing. I saw that in a few different sources where they were like, yeah, maybe he went to IHOP. And I was like, what are these friends thinking? Like, oh, yeah, there goes Greg on his way to IHOP.
Right. And he's obviously, he's at a bar.
Yeah.
He's celebrating his own accomplishment.
Right.
So that makes me think that he's had a lot more drinks than maybe he normally does when he goes out.
Right.
And also the time discrepancies, too.
Mm-hmm.
The phone call Greg had with William started at 1:10 a.m., but they said he must have walked away or walked to IHOP or something at 1:40.
Yeah.
So where is he in that time?
Right. And they said all the friend group really speculated on was that Greg, you know, after the phone call, it was like half an hour later. It wasn't right after. He got up and just left the tavern without saying a single word. So they watched him walk away. And they were like, oh, he's going to IHOP. What? You're not going to ask him. You're not going to call him and be like, hey, man, you maybe are a little drunk. Shouldn't be by yourself. We know that they took a cab from the apartment, so his Mustang was back at the apartment.
Yes.
So wherever he was going by foot, right? I don't know if I'd feel super comfortable letting my friend do that, you know?
In that weather, too.
Yeah.
It's not like it's springtime or summertime.
Exactly. Right. So, like you said, Katie, the friends were like, oh, we thought he was just going to IHOP.
Yeah.
And then his family later would say that this would probably not be something that Greg would do. Didn't fit his personality. Also, it was the middle of the night, and it was raining.
Right.
So, what's that all about? Very suspicious. Eventually, the friends went home, or back to the apartment, and they discovered, maybe they thought Greg would be there, maybe they thought, you know, he was at the IHOP, whatever, but they saw that his Mustang was still in the driveway, and he was not there. And there's actually, it's interesting, because there's phone records from Zachary, one of the friends that he was with, that shows that Zachary did try calling Greg's phone. And he also put in a call to the police and a hospital nearby asking if Greg.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So to me, that make, well, here's the thing. To me, that makes it a little less suspicious of the friends.
For
but
sure.
But also, did they do that to cover their tracks? I guess both is possible. But to me, that almost seemed like, yeah, they were looking for him. They probably got home and sobered up and were like, where is Greg? He's not at the local... How many IHOPs do you know that are open 24 hours?
I was just about to say that, too.
I know zero of them.
I was just about to say that, too.
Weird
stuff. Maybe it was like a 2010 thing. I don't know.
I don't know.
That's... It's very... It's just not really making sense to me.
None of it. Yeah. None of it is. So...
This was the last time that Greg was seen alive. For the next 3 days... No one had seen him. No one had heard from him.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of Greg's other friends who he hadn't been with that night,
mm-hmm.
his dad was getting really concerned.
Yeah.
Especially because he was so excited to start this new job and he didn't show up.
Yeah.
On his first day.
Yeah.
That's pretty indicative that something's going on.
And definitely unlike him.
Absolutely.
Is what they were saying.
So Greg's dad... grabbed a whole bunch of people, you know, some of Greg's friends, family, mm-hmm. and they all went down to Providence to search for him.
Yeah.
And one of Greg's friends found Greg.
Yeah. It was around 2:45 p.m. on the Tuesday, so now it was March 16th. And if you remember, I said that he was set to start his job on the 15th.
Yeah.
And so his friends and family, they were all there when one of his friends made a horrifying discovery just 3/4 of a mile from where Greg was last seen at that bar. So a family friend made the discovery of Greg's body washed up against a tree limb in the overflowing Woonsquatucket River. He was half in and half out of the water.
Wow.
Yeah. And so right off the bat, his family refused to believe that Greg had just drowned.
Yeah.
For one thing, Greg was a certified diver, which... Okay, reading that Reddit thread, I saw a lot of people speculate on this.
Yeah.
You probably did too, right?
For sure.
Great, he's a certified diver. That's awesome. But when you're drinking, throw that all away.
You could be Michael Phelps.
Yeah.
And have one too many and you drown. That's it.
Exactly. Exactly. The other reason why they refused to believe that it was a drowning was because of his injuries. And I gotta say, I'm with him on that one. His injuries were... Whew. They were not what I would imagine someone falling over and drowning would have.
Right.
Very specific injuries that I think are maybe indicative of a little something else.
So the medical examiner for this case had ruled Greg's death as accidental.
Mm-hmm.
He said that the injuries he had sustained were the result of him falling into the river.
Right.
These injuries included a smashed eye socket, cuts on his left hand and bruising on his right hand, as well as a damaged nose.
Mm.
He also had a small hole on each shin, and the white t-shirt he was wearing under his blue button-up, this really got me,
mm-hmm.
because this white t-shirt he has on underneath his regular shirt, his button-up,
right.
is really dirty and very brown in color,
right.
but the button-up that was over it is not as soiled, like by far cleaner than the undershirt.
That's so weird. That is very peculiar. And his injuries.
Yeah.
A smashed eye socket, a broken nose, and also he had a chipped tooth, and half of his jaw was kind of broken. To me, I'm sorry, that sounds like you got socked in the face.
Yes.
Like somebody punched you in the face.
Yeah.
And then I was thinking he had cuts on his left hand, and then bruising on his, you know, whatever. Cuts on his hand. That makes me think of defensive wounds.
True.
Like, he was putting his hand up to stop, like, a knife or whatever. Bruising on his hips and his legs, I could understand that, like, falling into a river makes sense. But a smashed eye socket, I don't know. That doesn't sound, like, you're not going to fall face first into a river and break your eye socket.
Right.
Maybe you could, I guess. I'm not a medical examiner, but it sounds like he got punched in the face. Like, it sounds like there was an altercation.
And that's exactly what his family was saying, too. Right. Like, how did he end up in the river?
Right.
Sure, he was intoxicated. His blood alcohol content was 0.25, which is 3 times the legal limit.
Yeah, that is, that is important,
mm-hmm.
for sure. But I don't know.
I will say, though, his family, they were saying that, you know, Greg's not really a big drinker. He doesn't really drink a whole lot.
Right.
Someone must have forced him to drink alcohol to make him have this high of a blood alcohol content.
Right.
I don't know where I stand on that. I think because he went down there to celebrate himself and, you know, his recent graduation from college and his new job.
Yeah.
I feel like he would be drinking a lot more than he usually would.
I think that's fair.
I think that's a fair assumption.
Yeah.
But I do see his family's concern with, like, he's not usually a big drinker.
Right. They did say that he was not a party guy.
Yeah.
I also saw this on the Reddit thread, is that somebody was saying, well, when you were in high school or in college, would your parents also say you weren't a big partier, but they didn't know that you were going to parties?
True.
You know what I'm saying? So I don't know. Like,
that's true, too. And I guess, know? Even so, if you're not a big drinker and you are going out and you're, like, you know, you're not the one driving,
mm-hmm.
you're staying over at someone else's apartment, you have no obligations till Monday,
right.
and this is your day to celebrate with your friends you haven't seen in a while.
Yeah.
You're in Massachusetts, they live in Rhode Island,
right.
and you're not usually a big drinker. I feel like if you are drinking a lot, your tolerance is not going to be up where it should be to be drinking as much as you would if you're celebrating something like starting a new job.
Exactly. That's a good point. The paper that, like, released the information about his blood alcohol level also made a statement here that said most levels between 0.21 and 0.29 would be subject to memory blackouts, staggering, double vision, loss of understanding of surroundings, poor judgment, impaired reactions, and loss of balance. So, I mean, okay.
Yeah.
I get it. That definitely could mean that he maybe was drunkenly walking away and had no balance, and he was blacked out, and he fell into the river. Absolutely, that's possible. But again, I gotta bring up the smashed eye socket and the chipped tooth and the...
That is very suspicious.
I think so.
I will say, like, when you fall into water, you do end up with blunt force trauma-related injuries.
Sure.
Because the surface of the water, the surface tension,
mm-hmm.
it still follows the basic rules of, you know, is it physics, where it's like every action has an equal and opposite reaction?
Yes.
So the force that you meet the water with, the surface of the water is going to meet back at you before you break the surface tension.
Right.
So it's not uncommon for victims who either fall into bodies of water from a good height.
Right.
Or maybe jump in on purpose.
Right.
It's not uncommon for them to have injuries related to blunt force trauma just because of that surface tension.
Right. That makes sense.
Someone brought up a really good point. I think it was also on the Reddit thread, honestly.
Yeah, they had a lot of good stuff.
The timing, the river could have been at low tide.
Right.
So the injuries he could have sustained if he maybe fell over and landed on the river bank, the exposed river bank, with tree branches or rocks or debris, because that's how they found him, was tangled up in a bunch of debris and stuff.
Right. I think that's a good point.
Yeah.
That is a very good point.
It's just really, I don't know.
I know.
I don't know what to think with this.
And, you know, it's ironic because it is suspicious.
It is suspicious.
Like we said, one of the medical examiner later informed the family that the injuries to Greg's body happened after he had drowned.
Wow.
And said that Greg's body was, you know, in the fast-flowing Woonsquatucket River for like 2 to 3 days.
Oh, I was thinking about that.
So maybe he got all those injuries from... But here's the thing. If you're dead, your body isn't going to bruise because you're not... You don't have any blood flowing to create that. To break the blood vessels, it's not going to leave, you know? So some of it's like... So maybe he got that on its way down. Who knows? Who knows? Now, as it often goes in true crime New England, Greg's family was not happy with the police work. And, you know, that falls, yeah, that falls on theme here,
I think. Absolutely.
So they straight up did not believe that it was an accidental drowning, and so they hired their own private investigators to help them with this case. And again, they were saying things like we had already talked about, like, he's not a partier, he's not like more than a three drink guy, you know, he's, you know, and they know him best, they're his family, but they just refused to believe that there was no foul play involved. Which, you know, fine, good on them. If they're gonna keep digging, that's fine. Actually, it was discovered that there was no records of witnesses to this altercation at the bar. They didn't take any witness statements. Yeah. The friends never came forward and said anything. Isn't that weird?
And, like, that's my thing, too, is the police are saying, oh, yeah, this is an accidental drowning. Mm-hmm. He got really drunk at this bar, and then he wandered off. Don't you want to go and ask people what happened? Like,
why did
if you saw this man, what was the state he was in?
Right.
Maybe you'd want to see if this particular bar is over-serving their customers.
There you go. You
want to do an investigation there.
That's a good point.
Like, how was this man able to be so intoxicated that his blood alcohol level was 3 times the normal limit? And even if this was an accidental death, how, like, I feel as though that could have been prevented.
Yeah, I agree. That's a very interesting point. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
Like, was the bar over-serving? But, I mean, maybe, I don't know. But that's a good, why didn't they look into the even possibility?
Yeah, and this bar fight, like, what happened there?
Who was involved? That's a good point.
Yeah.
Also, there wasn't really, some of the things the police were saying weren't really lining up.
Yes.
Did you see this?
Yes.
So they, apparently, the police initially stated that they had found Greg's cell phone and his keys in the bar parking lot. But later, it was discovered that his phone was actually in the water with his body.
Yeah. And his phone was destroyed.
It was smashed. I think 5 pieces, they said. Yeah. And there's a picture of it on one of these blocks. Okay. So why did the police say that they found his phone in the parking lot? What's up with that?
Yeah.
Like, what? And the phone actually was returned to his family in the 5 smashed pieces. And the state police said that they couldn't retrieve any data from it. You know, it was waterlogged, it was damaged, it was too much. Well, the family went to AT&T and they were like, can you help us with this? And the technicians literally told them, you know, it had been taken apart in such a weird way, like shattered, smashed, whatever, that it would be really hard to recover the data. But then a data recovery expert later said that the phone was, and I quote, definitely 100% this was not in the water. Yeah.
And the thing about this with data recovery mm-hmm. companies,
yeah,
people go to them all the time, like, oh, I dropped my laptop in the
toilet.
Bath. Yeah.
Right. I don't know.
Or, like, I dropped my phone in the toilet. Right. I dropped my work laptop in a puddle. Can you right. please tell me? Right. And so they see so many cases of water damage because yeah. that basically is what keeps them in business.
Right.
Is people being stupid and, like, I tried to put my phone in rice and it didn't work and
yeah.
all this.
Yeah.
It keeps them in business.
Truly.
So they have seen hundreds, if not thousands, of cases of water damage with iPhones and laptops and other kinds of technology.
Right.
So the fact that they are saying that this phone, not a chance, was in even a drop of water,
mm-hmm.
that's pretty crazy.
Yeah. And I actually have a quote here from this data recovery expert that said, well, first of all, they confirmed that it was not in the water, and it said, the style of the Apple iPhone that he had is equipped with tiny indicators deep inside the phone that signal whether the phone had been submerged in, like, either water or liquid. And according to Alexander Gessen, who was the data recovery expert that they contacted, Apple has installed these indicators in order to help determine whether the phone has been submerged or come in contact with a liquid that might void the warranty. Yeah. So it's all for warranty shit, which fine, whatever.
Yeah.
But so when they discovered that, yeah, there was no water damage because we check it so people like to know if they're trying to get warranty, whatever.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so they were like, no, yeah, his phone was definitely not wet.
Mm-hmm. I know. Weird, right?
They also said, the tech experts, they also said that the indicator on Greg's phone had been intentionally scratched off.
Yes. That blew my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I know.
Oh, so these guys were also able to get information off of the phone with no issue.
Right.
Whereas the police were like, yeah, this is unusable. We can't get anything off of this.
Yeah.
So these data retrieval experts or whoever are how we know that Greg even placed that phone call in the first place.
Exactly.
To his friend William.
Exactly. That's a good point. So, like, what are the police hiding? Are they just lazy?
Wow.
Oh.
Greg's parents are very concerned
mm.
because they actually found out a fun little tidbit.
Oh.
The Red Room nightclub
yeah.
where Greg was at with his friends is actually owned by Rebecca Carroll, the wife of Detective Sean Carroll of the Providence Police Department.
Hmm. You don't say.
The land that the bar is on is actually owned by another detective from Providence PD, Mark Seiko. Guess who was the first detective on the scene to investigate Greg's death?
Was it Mark Seiko?
It sure was Mark Seiko.
Hmm.
So Greg's parents are sitting there and they're like, you know, I smell a rat.
Yeah.
If not a conflict of interest.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
And then Greg's father, John Hart, stated, quote, I think he was beat up in the Red Room by the bouncer and a couple of cops who probably had tasers murdered him.
Oh my God. Wow.
Mary Ann Hart, she's Greg's mom. She had stated that the police, quote, were very antagonistic right from the start. We got nothing. They didn't look for Greg. They don't return phone calls. John then also added on to that statement by saying, the Providence police didn't even look for my son, okay? It took me bringing 50 kids down from Massachusetts to Providence to find my son.
Yeah.
Which is true.
Yeah.
They organized the search. They led the search.
Yeah.
And someone from that search party, one of Greg's own friends, had to find his body.
Right. Right. I don't know, man. Something's going on with that police department.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Same thing as so many of these other cases, the family has to be the ones to organize a search party,
yeah.
make flyers,
yeah.
go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth across state lines
yeah.
to find this missing person. And the police is like, eh, well, you know,
he's just, eh, you know.
Ran away.
He's he got drunk.
And, yeah, he's a runaway. That's your favorite thing. He got drunk and wandered off. Okay, sick, but where'd he go?
Right, exactly.
Where is he?
Okay, great, we found him. Why was he dead in a river?
Right.
Put the pieces together. Truly.
His parents were also very suspicious because part of me is saying, okay, it's very feasible that he could have fallen into the river accidentally.
Right.
I guess where they found his body, there was 8 feet of fencing and a 10-foot cement wall.
Really?
To prevent someone from falling into the river.
Hmm. Then how the hell did he get in the river?
And I'm thinking that too, and I'm also kind of wondering, well, the medical examiner seems pretty convinced that he had fallen at a different spot and then he had drifted.
Sure.
So, I mean, I guess that would add up.
Yeah.
But his family is viewing that as another key part that it wasn't an accident.
Right. Man, that is so crazy.
Yeah.
So, ultimately, the parents were like, okay, no one's coming forward, no one's saying anything. And unfortunately, to this day, it's still unsolved.
Yeah.
Unsolved in our sense, because according to the medical examiner and the police, it is solved. He accidentally drowned. It's like shut, you know, open and shut. But like we've been saying, something just feels kind of off about it.
Yeah.
His injuries, the situation, why is no one coming forward? Like, if it was just an accident, why did no one say anything?
Exactly. The whole situation with the phone, too,
yeah.
that's very bizarre.
Yeah. It is very weird.
I don't know what I think happened.
Yeah.
I don't know what I think. I was just about to ask you, what do you think?
I feel like,
I don't know.
My theory, and this could be totally off base, just kind of piecing things together. Mm-hmm. I really do feel as though it was an accident. I'm leaning more towards the accident theory.
Me too.
But just because of some of the different factors, especially with the police saying where his phone was found, like, it was in the parking lot. Oh, it was in his pocket.
Right.
It's mysteriously broken in five perfect little pieces. And oh no, there's water damage. We can't get any information from this.
Right.
I'm wondering if he did die accidentally.
Sure.
Okay. And the police are like, oh my God, so-and-so's detective's wife owns that bar. We can't get it shut down.
Yeah.
That bar has kind of like a protection around it, like a little police protection.
Yeah.
Insider deal.
I think you're right.
So I do wonder if he was overserved and they were trying to kind of play it off like, oh, it was an accident, don't worry about it, don't look into it, so that the bar would stay open.
I think you're right.
That's just my little theory.
I think that's a really good theory. What do you guys think? Please make sure to tell us.
Yes.
Because I mean, it seems pretty cut and dry, but also it doesn't at the same time. Something is just off. So you can let us know what you think on our Twitter or Instagram at truecrimene.
All lowercase.
Or you can email us your thoughts at truecrimene@gmail.com.
You can also check out our website, truecrimene.com. You can send us cases you'd like for us to cover, preferably in New England, please. You can also say hi, chat with us. Send us in your own personal stories that you'd like for us to hear. We don't even have to talk about them on here. And you can also be anonymous. We have received some anonymous submissions. Mm-hmm. Honestly, those are fun because it's like mysterious.
Ooh, who are you?
Mystery.
Yeah, we like it.
But yeah, we'd love to hear from you either way.
So yeah, with that, we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Goodbye.